Achieving or maintaining health goals can be a struggle. We know what we should do, we might even try it, but we often don't sustain those good habits. And we're not alone. For example, to reduce the risk of heart disease, the American Heart Association established Life Simple 7, seven health habits that will cut heart disease risk. Almost 2,000 American adults were scored, and guess how many achieved all seven? Only one. One person. And if you're not that one person, don't give up. There's hope. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. If only one person in 2,000 achieved all seven, the simple seven must be tough, right? Wrong. They include controlling blood pressure, cholesterol and sugar, being active, eating well, having a normal weight, and not smoking. So how did you score? Well, Lois Trader obviously didn't do too well because she had two heart attacks and now she lives with heart disease. Here's her story, brought to us by You Inspire.
I wish that someone was able to tell me that it was normal to be depressed. I wish that someone would have told me that it was normal to be really scared. I'm Lois Trader. I'm from Orange County, California. I have heart disease. I'm 55 years old, but at 46 years old, I had my first heart attack. My first reaction was like, dang, did I get this from my dad? This is how he looked right before he passed away. And he played tennis, he went swimming, he was really fit, and yet there was nothing that he could do, it seemed like, to prevent that heart disease from taking his life. I wanted to pretend it was something to do with my stomach. I didn't want to upset my girls. I didn't want to upset my husband. I didn't want to miss any work. I didn't want anything to change in my life. So at first, I was completely in denial that I actually had heart disease, and then really depressed because being raised in a family that was really aware of heart disease, I was a healthy person. My weight was correct. I actually had never smoked, didn't even drink. I just happened to be one of those people that, you know, wanted to take care of myself, and I was a stress monster, no doubt about that, a real typical A-type personality, which I never put into the mix of anything that would be unhealthy. I was really fearful. How would that affect my girls? Would that mean that they would also have heart disease, like I experienced with my dad? How would it affect my future? I mean, would I miss out on the rest of their lives? My one daughter was in college. My other daughter was expecting our first grandchild. So I had a lot of fear and I tried all the tricks. I went shopping, I got my nails done, thinking all the things I could do to relax, and you know what, it just didn't get better.
Which is how it is for many of us, just not getting better. Now, what if you had a personal coach, someone who knew you well enough to give you achievable goals, yet motivate you enough to move forward? And if you think you couldn't afford it, think again, because today's guest might have the answer. Plus, we're in the kitchen doing something a little unusual today, but first the news. In the headlines today, blood pressure app too low, walking now burns more calories, and eat less, live more. A popular smartphone app that measures blood pressure has been found to be inaccurate. A study by Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine recruited 85 adults attending clinic and measured their blood pressure using the app. Then their blood pressure was rechecked using a standard inflatable blood pressure cuff. In 80% of cases, the app was 12 points different for systolic blood pressure and 10 points different for diastolic. In the majority of patients with high blood pressure, the app showed normal blood pressure. So if you have high blood pressure, don't rely on a smartphone app to monitor it. use a good old-fashioned blood pressure cuff, and then use the app to get yourself moving. You've probably been burning more calories on your walk than you previously thought. Many walkers enjoy counting how many calories they've burned. Well, a new study at Southern Methodist University in Dallas found that the standards applied to walking on flat ground have predicted too few calories burned in 97% of cases. That standard calculation has been inaccurate for at least 50 years. This research team has now developed a new equation that's at least twice as accurate. Funding was provided by the US Department of Defense to prevent overextending their foot soldiers. So while they may not have to walk as far, may I suggest that you continue to walk just as much. How much or how little you eat could determine the rate at which you age. Calorie restriction is known to lengthen life, but how to do it remains a challenge. A research team at the University of Southern California has been investigating the effect of intermittent fasting on stem cells. They've found that fasting induces the body to go into what they call standby mode, during which bad cells die, stem cells are activated, and new fresh cells are formed. Their study design includes 5 consecutive days of a calorie-restricted plant-based diet every month for 3 months. The beneficial effect on the stem cells then appears to last at least another 6 months. However, for optimal response, a specific balance of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates are recommended. Their next step is to develop menus and sell meals in order to fund further research. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Today's interview was recorded at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting in Nashville, Tennessee, where we spoke to Dr. Liana Leonoff, a physician with expertise in coaching, positive psychology, and preventive medicine. I asked her about the value of lifestyle medicine and behavior change.
It really leverages our healthy lifestyles, eating healthy, being physically active, coping and managing more effectively with our stress, not drinking too much alcohol, not smoking, and trying to avoid medications which have many side effects and that actually don't work as well as true healthy lifestyles.
What is one of the elements to making those changes? Because they can be hard.
Exactly. So then the key to all of that, what lifestyle medicine approaches have in common, is that practitioners and teams and programs that offer lifestyle medicine need to have very, very effective behavior change programs and help people make those tough changes and not only make them but sustain them for the long term, for the rest of their lives. So it's a big challenge.
Yes, it is. And I guess one of the criticisms is you can just pop a pill and it's really easy, but for lifestyle medicine, it's a change and it needs to be sustained. So is there, and by the way, I mean, people don't take their pills for that long anyway, do they?
Exactly. In fact, half the prescriptions we understand from some studies get thrown in the trash can outside of the doctor's office. So that's not going to work too well either.
So even that tiny change is not something we do well. So what's the secret? What do you believe is the secret to kind of sustaining and supporting people through that change?
I'm so glad you asked, because that's been my area of passion for probably nearly 2 decades. And from all of my research and reading, it seems that besides the standard ways that we help people make changes, which is kind of think about the pros and cons of making a change and thinking about their support networks and making a specific plan and making small changes towards success. All of that is very important, but before that, the root of that is that someone really needs to have some what I call just emotional energy. They need to feel good about themselves in some way. And the field of positive psychology has been harnessed recently to help with that. And in fact, Robert Milner, who wrote one of the main textbooks on motivational interviewing, which is an approach to behavior change, now combines positive psychology with it. So in the old days, we used to say, oh, wow, you know, I have a hard time quitting smoking, but I'm afraid of getting cancer. Now it's more forward thinking and more positive. I'm having a hard time quitting smoking, but I sure would love to live long enough to see my grandchildren graduate from high school. So it's more forward thinking, more what are the drivers of that person, sort of more of a happy, positive, and obviously more propelling way to approach things.
I like happy and positive. We have more from Dr. Leonov in the next segment. I'll see you in the kitchen after the break, but first, this.
Ouch! I think I got bit by a spider.
Ooh, have a seat. I've got just the thing for you.
Oh, good. She'll have some high-powered drug for me, I'm sure.
Here, charcoal. It's a great remedy.
Charcoal? Are you kidding me?
No! You mix it with ground flaxseed, water, and then you make a poultice like this.
You're not using black magic on me.
You know, it's perfect for insect bites.
What does it do?
It takes away the pain, the swelling, and it absorbs the toxins. We'll just cover that with some plastic.
Right, the pain's already going away.
Really? There you go. It's used for poisoning all the time.
Well, have you ever used this before, or am I your guinea pig?
Lots of times before, Mr. Guinea Pig.
But won't it tattoo my skin?
No, because your skin's not broken. It's not going to leave a permanent mark.
Ah, well, thanks, Doc, for your black magic.
Use activated charcoal to treat toxins, to prevent swelling, bruising, and for pain. Doctor's orders.
Welcome back. You know, it's wonderful to grow your own food. And when you grow your food, you watch it grow and then you harvest it. But then you have the problem of how to preserve that so that it lasts through the coming seasons when you can't grow that particular produce. And something I've found that's really helpful is the dehydrator. And it's a really fun way to kind of make your harvest last through the year. Because when it's dried, you don't need to have the freezer. It's sort of the non-electrical way to keep your produce going through the coming year. You could freeze, you can can, and that's again a non-electrical way to store. But dehydrating, you throw it into baggies, it really shrinks it down and it makes it very effective. My favorite is bananas, dried bananas. You just can't beat dried bananas. It's a great snack food, and you know, I love to, on a Saturday night, we'll have popcorn and fresh fruit, and then I'll always finish with some dried fruit. Now, most people don't realize when you take a banana, you think, well, you have to slice it or do it whole. Actually, if you just take your banana and then at the bottom end, or the one that didn't have the handle, you just push your finger out, your banana splits into three segments. So bananas are segmented, and you can just lay it like that. The outside down means that it won't stick to your tray as badly. And there you go. And always use bananas that are spotty. That means that they're ripe. Their starch has been converted to sugars. They're going to be that much sweeter. And so buy them spotty. They're usually cheaper. And you can just fill these trays up. So what do they look like when they're done? Well, after about 3 days, which fills your house with wonderful banana aroma, you have these dried bananas. And then you can just put them in a baggie and store them. What other fruits and vegetables can you use? Well, many, many different things. And when I was hiking and going into the mountains and for 3, 4, 5 days on end, I would dehydrate almost anything. But you can do apples. You can slice your apples up. You can either do them in rings if you have an apple corer, or do them in slices if you're just going to take the cores out. Put them on. Depending how thick you make it will determine how long it takes to dry. But those are much quicker because they're thin. And this is what your sliced apple will come out like. And it will come out about 1/3 to 1/4 thinner than what you put it in as. So that's a good guide. And once you've got all your trays stacked, you can actually stack up to 16 trays and get the same amount of drying. And so I have 16 trays at home. It takes a bit of storage, but it's great. When you load it up with that fruit, pop the lid on, you can set the time, the temperature. And if you want to keep the
people say the enzymes, but if you want to keep those vitamins in there, it's like it's a raw food, you can keep the temperature down. It's going to take a lot longer to dehydrate. But you can do apples, you can do tomatoes. If I was doing these tomatoes, I'd just chop them in half so that the air can circulate through the center of the tomatoes. You can throw your berries in whole. Mushrooms are fun. You can just slice them and dehydrate them. They're great when you're out hiking. You throw mushrooms into your bean stew. Oh, it comes out good. And, you know, a favorite way for me to make kale chips is in the dehydrator. Because when I make them in the oven, I always forget the time, and they only take like 20 minutes, and you have to keep watching them and turning them. You pop them in the dehydrator, they just sit there, and about 4 or 5 hours later, you come back, and you've got your kale chips. And then if you want to freshen them up, you can just put them back in the dehydrator, or you can even just pop them in the electric fry pan and give them a quick flip, and they're ready to eat and crisp and crunchy again. So if you want some unusual way to store your produce, try the dehydrator and go for it. From You Inspire, here's more of Lois's story on her recovery from 2 heart attacks.
The things that get you upset on a daily basis, that's what I had to think about changing. And that part was so unusual for me to have to stop and think about my personality and think that, you know what, this has a lot to do with me, Lois, and if you want to go forward, if you want to be a part of your kid's life, you're going to have to actually seek counseling, talk to somebody, admit how depressed you are. I wish that, you know, I could have had a conversation with someone and told them, how in the world am I going to stop being such a stressed out person? I mean, I'd been that way for 46 years, and it actually worked well for me. You know, I got a lot done. I accomplished what I wanted by being like that. So I had to start dealing with the emotional impact that hearing that I had heart disease and would have it for the rest of my life meant. And thinking again that it was going to be a lot on me, seeing the amount of medication that I was prescribed, actually lining it up on my dining room table and looking at it thinking, what in the world am I going to do? How am I even going to implement this into my life? And buying the little boxes to put the pills in, and really not wanting anyone to see that, because I wanted to be who I was to my kids. I was cool, they liked me, I thought I was cool at least, and we hung out together, and I didn't want anything to change, but everything had changed. And that was truly hard. I really had to think about my lifestyle. What was I doing that added to premature heart disease? I mean, come on, you're not supposed to have heart disease at my age. But I learned more about heart disease, and I found out that a lot has to do with stress. And that's one thing that I had a lot of. So I had to figure out how not to throw a complete fit if my house wasn't perfect. How not to completely panic if I had to be somewhere real quickly and I wasn't going to be ready or think I looked good enough. When you get diagnosed with heart disease, you have to really take a step back. You have to look at, how am I going to live my life with this, and how am I going to deal with it?
That's a tough one. Today we're talking with Dr. Liana Leonoff, author of the ebook My Happy Avatar and founder of HealthType.com. I asked her how she uses positive psychology to leverage healthy change.
The ability to know what one's resources are, whether they're in their environment or personally, what, again, gives them that emotional boost. And it might be meditating, it might be doing a hobby where they get that sense of flow and they're in the moment and they kind of forget their troubles. It could be journaling, it could be a sense of gratitude for what they have in their lives. Also forgiving. Certainly we all have challenges in our lives and situations where there's anger and how to get beyond that. So that's the resources component. And related to that is our supports, our social supports, who in our lives, personally, professionally, maybe in our community, our neighborhood, our faith-based organizations can really support us. Again, give us that buoyancy in order to have the energy to tackle the tough pieces of having to do a behavior change. And sometimes just even people that have major challenges, for example, they're very overweight, and that might come from a history of having had some abuse or some very difficult times in their past. And they may just not see through all of that clutter, what is inherently good about them. And so we also encourage, as part of positive psychology, for people to identify what we call their character strengths. And there actually is a free website that's through the University of Pennsylvania of a validated test, the VIA Strength Finder, that helps people identify sort of at least their top five, you know, what am I all about? It's free. You register because it's part of their research, so now they have a huge database. But it's a beautiful resource for anyone to say, okay, well, you know, kind of what am I showing to the world? What do I have to show to the world? Even if everything else in my life is falling apart, even if I am now 300 pounds and I just can't see my way through it, but isn't there something essential about me that I have to offer the world? And through lifestyle medicine, through good coaching and positive psychology methods, we start to draw that out. And all of a sudden, the person's like, wow, yes, I can do something.
So people could go on there feeling a bit glum about themselves and leave there realizing that they have something to offer?
Exactly.
That's part of what it's designed to do.
Exactly. And years ago, there's another important person in the field of chronic disease management. Her name is Kate Lorig, and she's been very well published. She has a program that she developed that's very evidence-based because she shows results, where it's peer-to-peer counseling. And I spent a week in that program getting some intensive training. And what I witnessed is that every day everyone would have a little homework assignment or some behavior to do, and they would come back and report. And if they would come back and just basically say, wow, I just didn't do it, my dog ate my homework kind of thing, just really glum, that through this process of positive psychology is what I'm turning it now, and focusing on character strengths, they were able to pull something positive out of that. And they may say, wow, well, you know, it's a good thing that you value your relationship with your dog. It might be as silly and as simple as that, but it makes people, or may they just say, I just didn't do it. I just didn't feel like do it because they may come up with some other reason. And they can pull that out and say, but good for you. You have good judgment. And judgment is actually one of the character strengths this particular week or last night, you had the good judgment to choose something else that you felt was more important in your life or in your family over what we decided was our homework. So it's a very interesting, opened my eyes of how to make truly lemonade of lemons. And that's what positive psychology is all about, to kind of, again, give people that buoyancy and feel good about themselves.
You know, this reminds me of the Alcoholics Anonymous. That's peer-to-peer counseling and support, isn't it? And we know that's been very successful for 70 years.
Exactly. So the character strengths, we were talking about positive psychology.
Yes. Yes.
So there's resources, supports, character strengths.
Now, you talk a lot in your book, My Happy Avatar, and I understand you're getting some new material out, which I'm very excited to be waiting for,
yes,
is about kind of our cognitive strengths or our personality types, as some people call them. Tell us about that and how that plays into this.
Yes. So we were just talking about character strengths, and another way to look at our personal strengths is through how we prefer to spend our time mentally, and how what's our comfort zone in how we take information from the world around us, how we make decisions, how we make plans about our lives. And theories that I've been building on are from a psychologist, Carl Jung, and many years ago he identified 8 cognitive functions. And this was long before EEGs and MRIs, and it's amazing the work that he did, which is now being validated through EEGs. And so each of us has a certain personality preference, we call it. And it's not to put anybody in a box, but we all can use these cognitive mental functions, but just some come a little easier than others. And through a personality assessment, the Myers-Briggs, we can at least get a little bit of a clue, oh, okay, this might be my kind of personality type, and associated with that are these strengths, these brain strengths.
So by knowing our brain strengths and using them to propel us forward, we become more likely to succeed in achieving our health goals. Coming up after the break, we'll see what apps and websites my colleagues here at Hope Channel have found helpful. And because we're all different, we bring various aptitudes and preferences to the table. So consider this. Being human means being born with tendencies to do wrong, inherited from our parents and forebears. As we grow, we develop character traits that are not necessarily desirable either. Like rocks engraved and chiseled by the experiences of our lives, we are similar, yet no two of us is the same. Each is unique. Despite the damage, God is willing to take us as we are with these human elements, and if we're willing, to transform us. When Jesus chose 12 disciples to take over his ministry, he knew their weaknesses and defects of character, yet he gave them the most important responsibility, to work with God to save the world. There were James and John, the ambitious sons of thunder, Levi Matthew, the publican, Simon, the fiery zealot, impulsive Peter, mean-spirited Judas, timid Thomas, and doubting Philip, and a few others. After the crucifixion, these 12 disparate individuals became united through prayer, united in love, and united by a common goal. The Holy Spirit was poured out, making them an unstoppable force for good. The Bible tells us that 3,000 people believed in Jesus in one day and they were baptized. These men, who had spent 3.5 years with Jesus, were now transformed. God doesn't choose us because we're perfect. He calls us despite our imperfections. In 2 Corinthians 4, 6 and 7, Paul says that we can see the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the life of Jesus Christ. And the same light can shine out of us when we, like the disciples, commit ourselves to God. Paul says we're like feeble clay jars, that when we're changed, our transformation is so incredible, it becomes evidence for the power of God. So don't think that you're too fallen to come to him, that you're beyond redemption, your character is too defective for him to change. It's because we're fallen, sinful, weak and wounded, that our lives can become powerful sermons of God's grace, but only if we place ourselves in his hands. Are you ready? Welcome back. We're doing something a little bit different for exercise today. We're actually going to sit here as a group and talk about exercise. And I want to know what your favorite app is. So Facebook or email me and tell me what your favorite app is. But Phil, what's your favorite? What are you using to get you motivated and out there?
I think I tend to follow the crowd. And I love the Fitbit app. And I love it because it works well with my Fitbit. And it's the type of thing that you can either get very involved or you can kind of be hands-off. So I wear my Fitbit. It tells me the time. It tells me how many steps I've taken. It even goes on to tell me my heart rate, all things like that. And then what it does is it connects to my phone. It lists everything. And that's how I can kind of see and track my progress throughout the week. I can even challenge people, friends that I've got that also have a Fitbit. And we'll challenge each other to do challenges throughout the week or on the weekend or something like that.
Yeah, very cool. It's fun.
What about you?
Well, I like the 7-minute workout app, which is a 7-minute workout. So from the very beginning, you start the exercise and you have a 30-second intense exercise and then you have a 10 seconds of rest and then you go for another 30 seconds of intense exercise. I like it because it gives a little bit of variety in regards to strength and cardio. And believe it or not, but after 7 minutes, I am a little out of breath. And if I want to go for a challenge, I'll do 14 minutes and you can even do more cycles. So do 21 minutes and keep going so you can have more of a workout from this app. But it's a really nice app. I really like it. And I use it a lot. I use it with my husband, with my family. Sometimes if it's after a holiday meal, we're all tired. Let's do a 7-minute workout and we all get together and we do this workout together.
Wow, that great. Sounds yeah. fun.
Now, how about Dr. Katya? What's your favorite app?
Well, right now, my favorite app is Instep for Life app. Have you heard of it?
I've heard a little bit of it, and yeah. I heard it's very interesting.
Well, in fact, I started using it here in the building where we're working at the General Conference, and it's really cool because not only you can track your own steps, so I can do that and go in and track my steps, but I also can compete with other people in the entire building. And so with that, you know, we have a coordinator here, and they can look and see how all of us are doing. And it's neat because actually, Phil, it can link to Fitbit.
Oh, okay.
And so I also have a Fitbit, so but I'm using the InStat app because it pulls all the data from Fitbit if I want to do that. It can also use my phone. We have a motion, you know, feature on the iPhone in this case, and it can actually pull the steps for people that don't have a Fitbit, you know, so it can pull the steps from the iPhone. And so it doesn't even need to record manually. You can use that. For others that don't have either, can go ahead and just report any activity from walking to running, exercise, I mean, you name it. Even gardening. 40 minutes of gardening is one aerobic mile, so I get credit for that. And it's really cool.
Well, that sounds great. But is it confined just to the building?
No, anybody can use it. In fact, we have regional conferences using it, unions throughout the North America region in Canada using it, and actually launching it around the world. So it should be really cool.
Well, that sounds great. So soon everyone can get into InStat for Life.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite app is really simple because I like simple. I use Daily Mile. And Daily Mile, I'm typically walking, so I just plug in, go, okay, gonna switch my GPS on, and today I will either run, cycle, or walk, so I'll choose what I'm doing, and off I go, put my phone in my pocket, and then when I get back, it tells me, yay, and it gives me my little cheer for the day. But you know, when I'm in the office, I really like ABE for fitness, it's a video and it gives you a 5-minute workout right in your office chair. It uses your office chair, it uses the wall, all kinds of things, your desk. And you know, when you do 5 minutes several times during the day, you get pretty sore by the end of the day. So ABE for Fitness, it's free and it comes from Harvard. So, well, thanks for sharing. And I hope that's given you lots of ideas of what you can do to use digital technology to keep you moving forward.
Is it a big deal if you are a couch potato? Well, a recent study by the National Institutes of Health argues that physical inactivity and obesity are very big deals. Obesity and physical inactivity increase your risk for a lot of unpleasant things, specifically heart disease, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and certain cancers. And these risks increase as we get older. So today, get up off the couch and enjoy some physical activity, which is another ageless advantage.
Let's look at some questions we've received from you via Facebook, text, and phone. Someone called and said, when I was a child, I had asthma. As I grew older, I don't have it anymore. Could it come back? Well, in about 1 in 3 children who grow out of asthma, there is actually a recurrence as an adult, though it's often less severe, so that's good news. But one thing to consider are the allergens in your diet or in your environment if it does come back, and dairy is a very common culprit. Someone else texted, my daughter has bad acne and has increased hair growth all over, including facial hair. Would it be more helpful to see a fertility doc instead of a dermatologist? Well, it sounds like she may have an endocrine disorder, including things like PCOS. So it'd probably be nice to find a good lady endocrinologist and take her there to be examined and be tested. It may be an endocrine imbalance, it may be PCOS, but have it checked out. Jacinth asks, I've been diagnosed with PCOS and I'm not able to get pregnant. Can you give your suggestions and treatment? Well, we've done a whole show on PCOS. So hop onto our website, www.hopetv.org/gohealthy/watch, and you can see the entire episode for yourself, and I hope you find it helpful. Jo says, I'm 65 years old. What natural resources can I use to raise testosterone levels naturally? I used to work out, haven't done so for 10 years. What do you suggest for me to rebuild body mass again? Well, Jo, you have an advantage over other men your age in that you already had worked out before, so your muscles actually have a memory of that, believe it or not, and they will respond more quickly when you start working them out again. So start building them up, go slowly, but keep working at it, and you can rebuild muscle definitely at the age of 65. Some men take testosterone therapy,
But there are risks to that, including heart disease. And at your age, that's not a good look. You could see an endocrinologist and have an assessment, but I like your idea of going natural. Remember, men eating a whole food, total vegetarian diet have higher testosterone levels. But be sure that you get 1 to 1.5 cups of peas, beans or lentils every day if you are sliding meat off your plate. Thanks for those questions. Remember to like us on Facebook, and there you can find tips and videos almost every day. Now, let's go shopping. Collard greens are brassicas. They're grown as an ornamental and as a food in South America, America, Africa, parts of Europe and India. It's a good source of vitamin C and has many nutrients with potent anti-cancer properties, like diindole methane and sulforaphane. In fact, the diindole methane is a good modulator of the immune system with potent antiviral and antibacterial properties also. So next time you have an infection, start eating lots of collard greens. It has powerful anti-inflammatory properties and it's loaded with vitamin K. So if you're on blood thinners, you don't want to eat too much. Wash it well, shred it finely, and then steam it with onions and a little salt or coconut milk for flavour. Bon appetit! On today's show, we have a physician whose passion is to develop low-cost and sustainable support systems in the form of apps and a website to help people achieve and maintain happiness and healthy habits. Before the break, Dr. Leonoff was telling us about the 8 cognitive functions that exist and from which we mostly derive 4 strengths. Here she continues.
4 of them are in how we relate to the outer world, and 4 of them how we relate to the inner world. 4 of them relate to, again, how we get information from the world, and 4 about decision making. And when we do the personality assessment, it will determine, there's a little formula, and it'll determine which of those 8 is number 1, what we call the dominant preference, which is our biggest brain strength.
So you're suggesting we have a little bit of everything, but some of them are what really drive us each day.
Exactly. They drive us, and they just come so naturally that without any energy, we just fall back to them. And that's a real key in behavior change, because behavior change takes energy, it takes concentration, takes attention. And so if we can leverage what comes more easily, what we're calling sort of lower cognitive load, just less mental energy, less effort, if we can leverage that as we're making behavior change, it's going to make it easier to make that change and probably easier to sustain, because we're going to fall back to that anyway.
So this is really important to understand, and this is not all wishy-washy. This, for me, when I did a Myers-Briggs, I found it so helpful to realize why I did what I did and the way I did it, and how I related to other people. So carry on and tell us about these 8 things.
Yes, so we don't have time to go over all 8 of them, but I can use myself as an example. So my personality type is ENFP, so that's extroverted, intuitive, feeling, perceiving. So and based on a formula, we can go over all the letters, but again, right now we're just going to focus on those mental functions. So based on a formula, my 2 brain strengths, cognitive strengths, are top of the list is called extroverted intuition. So I relate to the outside world, and I see patterns, I come up with ideas, I like options, I like brainstorming. So if someone were to draw me out and engage me and say, how are we going to change your eating habits and get you to eat more fruits and vegetables, the best way to draw me out is to let me loose and let me start making a list of lots of options. Oh, I could do this, I could do that, I could try. In fact, I did go to the grocery store once and said, I'm going to identify 50 new fruits and vegetables in the grocery store and experiment with them. So you can see how that it engages me, and it's a creative way to make that kind of behavior change. And then my second, what's called sort of auxiliary function, has to do with my inner world, which is that once I come up with all that brainstorming list, I need to be left alone a little bit and reflect on how those options relate to my values and what's really important to me, so I can kind of hone down on the one that I think, you know, this really rings true to what I believe in, so I'm going to try this. And then, of course, we experiment and circle back around. So I think that's a great example of how using our cognitive strengths, even just in these very simple examples, can energize and drive someone forward towards making behavior change.
Now, what about the decision-making, or was that included in that?
So that's included. So the extroverted intuition, the brainstorming, was taking information in. The introverted feeling about my values was my decision-making. I was making the decision based on what was really important to me. As opposed to, as a contrast, others might have more of a thinking function, and they're going to look at it more logically, more factually, rather than their beliefs and values. They might want to go read some scientific articles, for example, and then make their decisions. So those differences, and various health coaches, but even just knowing that about ourselves, kind of if a doctor gives you a scientific article and you're like, well, don't feel so bad. That may just not be ring true for you. And along those lines, a lot of the technologies that we're using now are really focused on facts and figures and, okay, how many calories am I eating? How many miles am I walking? And for some of us, our personality is just not engaged by that. But then
right,
we might feel bad about that.
I'm a thinker, so I like to see how many steps I've done and how many hours of sleep I've got. Whereas for you, that's really not going to rock your boat, is
it? Exactly. That just glazes me over. It's like, how boring. What I want to know is, am I at least on the right track? So if you give me sort of a red, yellow, green, and we've talked about that sort of in health behavior, that's enough. Don't give me the numbers. It's just way too boring. Let's start talking about more ideas. How can we do it? Let's go back to the ideas so you can see that that's where my default is, my extroverted intuition and brainstorming.
Right. Now we're just kind of touching on the technology side, which is your other passion is how to put these two together. So, you know, we walk around with our mobile devices, and here I am sitting with mine, and, you know, our smartphones, and we're always interacting with them. Now, is that good? Is that bad? Does it have pros and cons? Talk to us about that.
Yes. We all obviously need technology nowadays, and technology is going to be a wonderful way to help us with behavior change, because it's our coach, it's our support 24/7, or for information, for guidance, for ways. Even now that I'm working on to give you tips based on your personality and your strengths. So that's all great. Some personalities do really need social interaction, and a lot of us now are using, of course, social media, and that's, I think, only a little piece of the puzzle for that extroversion that I was talking about in organizing our world. And some of us might not be taking that face-to-face time as much as we used to before technology, and that actually may be draining our energy. Again, we were talking about how to really boost our emotional energy. So we want to kind of balance our time with technology, which is a good idea for everyone, but for some personality types, it's particularly crucial to have that real face-to-face time. So that's an example of some of the things that we need to be thinking about with technology, as well as just the kinds of apps. There's thousands and thousands of apps, and again, as we alluded to, a lot of them around behaviors are very numbers-oriented, and if you're trying to lose weight or do something a little different for yourself, and you're just not drawn to those, that might be the key into kind of see if there are other apps or other ways to go ahead and boost your coaching and your health behavior change.
More after the break. Don't go away. We're back with Lois Trader, a heart attack survivor with a type A personality who struggled to deal with stress. Then she was given what seemed like a mountain of medications to take. How did she cope? Watch.
You know what I do now is I judge what upsets me by if it's going to upset my relationship with my grandkids. I mean, that's kind of a cool way of looking at it. I had something about a month ago that the people in my life thought would really upset me. And they said, Lois, how come you're not upset? And I go, when I was talking to Jacob, he didn't seem too upset about it. Well, yeah, he can't read the news. You know what I mean? He didn't know the people that upset me. Me getting all jacked up about things I really can't control, putting myself in danger, is going to affect the people I love. And you have to learn how to go, wait, what's my priorities? What's really important? And that's what's important, is my relationship with the people I love. That's what counts. Our heart is a muscle, and it gets damaged. And that muscle, it takes time to heal. Your heart is not only healing because of the disease, it's healing because it's been broken. And I learned that as my heart was healing, and the veins and the arteries and everything were getting stronger, I was learning to love more. And it's loving yourself. You have to love yourself enough to hang in there, enough to get a diagnosis and realize it's okay. And when you love yourself, your heart grows. We live in a way, way better time. There's a lot of hope for people like us, and that's important. I'm Lois Trader, and if you have heart disease, you can live a full, fun life. Trust me, I'm doing it, and I've been doing it for 8 years.
Her life does look full. I asked Dr. Leonov what to consider when selecting a health app.
What is really crucial is to research the company, the organization that put together the app. Particularly when we're talking about health and health behavior, there are now many, many digital health companies. They're trying to do a good thing, but many of them don't even have the right medical advisors there behind them. There have actually been studies that have shown, they've looked at some apps to see, like a weight loss app, to see if they've included what we know works for weight loss, and almost none of them included sort of the basic elements of weight loss. But now there are companies that are more legitimate. So again, looking to, if it's a government-sponsored kind of app, for example, Centers for Disease Control, or a physician group that's put together an app, that kind of thing, I would trust that a little bit more. And if you're not sure, then talk to your provider, talk to your doctor and say, hey, you know, I've researched and this one kind of looks interesting to me, but is it really, do you think it's really helping me in a proven way, a more scientific way. So now, there's that. Yes.
Yes. Now, we've had a lot of scares of having our information used by other parties that we wouldn't want. Do we need to be careful about, we're putting in personal information here, do we need to be careful about or worry about that?
Well, absolutely, of course. We know there have been breaches in privacy, and so the world of digital technology and the folks that have some real credibility behind them take that very seriously. So probably all the companies and organizations I was mentioning are going to be doing their best from a technology side to protect our privacy. But every app, every website should have a privacy policy. We should be asking those questions and making sure that we're reassured that all of our information is private, and or if there's some pieces of it that is being used or is public, that we know exactly which ones they are and that we're giving permissions for that to be used. And then in terms of other elements for an app towards health behavior change, almost all apps have some other just basic elements. I talked about sort of the credibility and the science behind it, but, you know, simple triggers, alarms, calendars, functions, that kind of thing. All of them have that, and so those are easy ways to harness technology. But ultimately, the app that's going to help you is the one that you're going to use. So oftentimes, something looks nice, and we download it, and we use it once or twice, or I think on average, most people drop off an app after about 30 days or a month. So what really speaks to you, perhaps using, we were talking about a little bit about brain psychology, visual images, videos are now much more popular embedded in apps. apps that are more engaging, that are informational, maybe show you how to do things, so that adds a layer beyond the sort of simple alarms and reminders.
So if it gives you a recipe, you might see how to put it together, or if it gives you exercise, you see how to do it.
Exactly. It gives you those actual positions. It might be a yoga position, etc. But something beautiful, something that you, you know, it's that user experience that you like it and you're going to keep going back to it, and then you're going to get some benefit from it.
And for someone who is needs that social support, it might offer them to be in a group, or someone who likes competition, then you might be able to compete with other people.
Exactly. So there are a lot of health forums, group sharing, so you can come out of an app like that, share your information if you want to with a particular group, so you can compete with each other, you can support each other, you can praise each other. In fact, we were just talking a little bit about sort of gamifications and some other elements of apps. You can get some points or rewards, or an altruistic part of an app actually works for some people. It's that personality that you can actually donate your points to someone else, your sister or your daughter, and that makes you feel good and that engages you. Like, I'm going to get more points, and then she might use those points to get some rewards, etc.
We see that a lot with moms. They're willing to do something for themselves if it helps their kids.
Exactly.
So that's a great way to kind
yes.
of engage. You wouldn't do it for yourself, but you'll do it for someone else.
Exactly.
So there are great fun ways that apps can really help, by the sounds of it.
Yes, it's our not our future, it's our current world and reality, and it's only going to get better and more useful over time.
Now, you're developing a website. Tell us a little bit about what's coming.
Yes. In the field of positive psychology has mainly been with researchers, psychology researchers, and I'm doing my best to bring it to someone's hand, to someone's pocketbook, and to physicians and providers where it's really practical and usable. And so we're going to have a general website that's going to summarize some of the science behind positive psychology. It's going to have a blog, give general information. But through there, you can access, it'll be a membership, access an app that walks you through what's going right in your life, in terms of your resources, your supports, your character strengths, your brain strengths that we've talked about, and reminds you to kind of focus on what's going well in your life, and it's an attempt to also make it very engaging, because there'll be pretty pictures of the kinds of things that reflect on who you are, so that hopefully people will go back to it. And we were talking about a little bit about gamification. There are some suggestions for activities that would boost your emotional energy. There's a little avatar, so that's why it's called My Happy Avatar. And the avatar actually changes smiles. And at the end, if you get enough points each week, you have a little party. There's streamers, and it's fun. So hopefully that will engage people to at least reach out to it when things just aren't going so well, and they just need a reminder that things are going very well in their lives, after all, even if it's in here.
If you're ready to have fun making changes, then look at the pros and cons of making the change, find the support to make it, and begin making small changes towards your final goal. Most of all, find out what motivates you and recharges your emotional energy bank, something that makes you feel good about yourself. If you have a smartphone, use it to support personal improvement. But be sure your personal information is kept safe when you're using an app, and that the developer is a credible source for advice. Check out Dr. Leonov's resources at healthtype.com and her app My Happy Avatar and her website myhappyavatar.com. This personalized coaching site will assess your cognitive strengths and use those strengths to help propel you forward in a way that makes it feel almost natural. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.